Hotel history is created for adult audiences. Content may not be suitable for all listeners. Discretion is advised. You're listening to Hotel History. We take you with us through the sordid history and scandals of some of the world's most famous and infamous hotels. I'm Dieta.
And I'm Yael. Let's get started.
Well, we are so excited today. We have a special interview with JQ Louise. We would love for you to tell everybody who you are, what you're about, what you do.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be on today. So my name's JQ Louise. I'm a travel writer and influencer based in Boston. I've been doing this since 2016, and I love checking out unique hotels and especially historic hotels. So I'm really happy to be on today, and we're actually talking about one of my favorite destinations as well.
Yeah, today we are talking about the Cannes Hotel in the south of France, right? I knew it was there, but I keep on thinking it's in Monaco.
Oh, it's close. Yeah.
No, so my brain, I'm like, is it France or is it Monaco? And also, we're going to be talking about a hotel having to do with Grace Kelly. And,
oh, yeah.
You know the connection there. So in my head. But yeah. And the Cannes Festival is going to be happening soon, right? In May, in the beginning of May.
Yeah. Yeah. Like mid-May. It's coming up like really soon.
And what else?
In Boston, we have the Boston Marathon this Monday, like this coming Monday, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. This week is like really intense. And there was actually a marathon here, too, like a few days or right before Passover or Coachella.
Yeah.
And that was actually crazy.
How many people come into Boston for the marathon?
So there's 30,000, like over 30,000 runners. And then, you know, everybody brings guests, you know, family and friends and everybody. It's like, it's our most international event. And I even noticed like this whole week, everybody around town, you hear way more languages being spoken and you see all these athletic people just walking around. And, you know, they're obviously just like, you know, they're tourists, like they're walking around having fun, like, you know, checking things out. But they're all wearing like the coolest sporty stuff too. Like everybody around here is like, it's so fun being in Boston the week before the marathon. And then the weekend before the marathon, it's a ton of fun because it's just like a ton of stuff going on.
That sounds fun. Yeah. I bet the hotels are booked.
Yeah. It's literally their peak season. Like this time, like this week is the busiest. And then like it's even busier than like Christmas and New Year's and like holiday time. It's way busier for us this week.
Wow.
Busier than St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, because honestly, for St. Patrick's Day, it's just everybody who lives here. Like nobody's coming. I mean, some people come here for St. Patrick's Day, but like for the hotels and everything, like they've been booked for like months.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, because not yet. The Boston Marathon, everyone could participate. It's like a whole thing.
I knew it was big, but I did not know 30,000 runners. That's insane.
And like everything's like everybody has the day off from like a lot of businesses close to like, you know, people have day off from school and like tons of offices and everybody closes too because it's just too busy. Like everybody's just going to the marathon.
That's so funny. That's so nice, though. It's like a collective thing, you know, like.
Look at holiday for the whole town. I love it.
Yeah. Okay. So, should we talk about?
Let's talk about Cannes. We love French hotels because we always butcher the pronunciation of everything. So, JQ, we will be taking your lead on how everything is.
Well, better. I'll try my best too.
But yeah, as Yael was saying, Cannes is located on the Côte d'Azur in the French Riviera. So this is that beautiful part of the southern coast of France that you always see photos of. How many times have you gotten to go?
Honestly, I've lost count. So South of France is my all-time favorite destination, and I'm always recommending it to everybody because you can really do it. No matter what your budget is, what your timeline is, like you don't need 3 weeks to go there. You can literally go there for a long weekend, especially if you live on the East Coast. I've done a ton of like you know, long weekend trips, 3-day trips, 4-day trips, whatever. Because I also, like, from New York, there's direct flights to the Nice airport. And like from Boston, you know, I've just connected through either London or, you know, usually London, but sometimes through New York. But yeah, it's literally my favorite destination.
Wow. So I didn't know it was so accessible. To me, the south of France, which is one of my top places I want to visit, sounds fancy, expensive. And if I go there, they might spit on me and say, go back home. Like, what are you doing?
No. And the people are so friendly. Like, they're so friendly. They love tourists. Like, honestly, they love people visiting. Just like the hospitality culture is awesome. And it is very different than Paris. Like, I think, you know, like the stereotype of like Parisians being kind of mean or cold, especially to Americans, is definitely a little bit true. And I think it's just, you know, it's just kind of like a very like city attitude. Like, honestly, people say that about people from Boston or New York. Like, honestly, just we're in a fast paced like lifestyle, and, you know, people are getting in the way who aren't from there. You know, you get annoyed. I think it's more like that. But in south of France, you know, it's a much more laid back atmosphere. You know, it is where a lot of people retire. Like, there's definitely kind of like that Florida vibe a little bit of like a lot of retirees with their little dogs walking around. But in like the coolest way, you know, like they're also like the coolest, like old ladies walking around in like fur coats with their little Pomeranians, like all year round. You know, it's just a very cool, like retro vibe. And you can, you know, kind of do it in any way that you want. Like, there's boutique hotels, there's ultra luxury hotels, there's tons of Airbnbs. And yeah, there's tons of awesome beaches, and a lot of them are just public free beaches too.
Oh, wow. Okay. You're making me really want to go.
Yeah. And how could you be in a bad mood when you live on the French Riviera? That's it.
Exactly. It's sunny all the time. Like, it's literally like, I forget what the sunny day count is, but it's like 95% of the year you get like sunny days.
Oh, so similar to LA and San Diego. Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of like a San Diego type vibe, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, people in San Diego are really nice.
That sounds great.
That makes sense. Yeah. That does sound great. I really want to go. But yeah, what you said about Paris is right. I dated someone who is from Paris, born and raised. And he was like, they're fucking assholes. Like, he did it the nice. Like, there's a reason I don't live there anymore. So it's good to hear that maybe there are other places. I think France needs to take its reputation back. But the people from the suburbs and outside of Paris need to do it. So,
it's just like, also, you know, usually like in America, if you meet somebody from France, usually they're from Paris because, you know, they come to America for school or for work or whatever. So I feel like we just usually meet Parisians. And I feel like that's why, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And they're always nice. Like the Parisians here are not. But I think they're aware of the Parisian reputation. It's kind of like New York. But I don't know enough about Parisian actually to make an assumption. Because my dad said he went to Paris once and he didn't speak the language. He didn't speak anything except like Romanian. And this Parisian guy like literally took his hand and like showed him where he needed to go. It was really nice to him. So from then on, he's like, what are you talking about? The Parisians are so nice.
I mean, hey, it's who you meet. And it's honestly how you know what you put out there too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So you know what? This is a love letter to France. We love you.
One of the reasons that Cannes is so popular and well known now is because of the film festival. So I wanted to talk a little bit about just the start of the film festival first before we jump into the hotels. So I was reading that the first, like, the idea of it was born, like, right before World War II, because apparently the Venice Film Festival was the big deal back then, but they started to have some issues with it because of the rise of fascism. And apparently the fascists in Italy were starting to try to have a little bit too much influence on the film festival. And so the French government was like, that's enough. We can do it ourselves. And so they were going to start the Cannes Film Festival in 1939, but they had to cancel it because Germany invaded Poland and World War II started. So they had to wait until 1946. And that's when it officially really got going. And it started by showcasing films from 21 countries. And it was pretty much a hit from day one and has been going on, I think, every single year since then. I don't think it's been canceled since World War II.
Like, that's cool, though. I didn't realize it was because, like, you know, in Italy, it was become, you know, the fascists were rising and everything. So then the French wanted to have like a.
Yeah, you know, I had no idea there even was a Venice Film Festival. Never heard of it.
Did you see? I feel like last year, the pictures from the Venice Film Festival finally like went viral. It was like George Clooney and Amal Clooney. There were a few pictures of them like getting off of one of those beautiful like Riva boats in the canal, and they were going to an event or something. And I think everybody, like, I only really, it got on my radar, honestly, last year because of these photos. And it just like went super viral because of, you know, their outfits and everything. And they were just like awesome photos of them just like getting off of this boat. So I feel like Venice is like,
yeah,
coming
brought it back. Yeah, maybe because of George Clooney.
They just needed that one viral moment.
It still doesn't have the same reputation as Cannes, I feel like. To also mention that, yeah, Italy was going through its fascist period, but so was France.
I think, I guess France's wasn't quite as developed yet. We're going to talk about three different venues today. So these, have you, JQ, have you stayed at both the Carlton and the Martinez?
I have a few times.
So let's start with the Carlton, because I liked its origin story. So I wanted to start with it.
So, I mean, just, you know, before we get into the history of it, I can just maybe talk about it today. So the Carlton, I mean, it is the icon of the French Riviera. Like, I think in the French Riviera, there's like the Hotel Cap du Ferrat, which is now a Four Seasons, like a little bit outside. But other than that, like the photos that you see, all the postcards, is the Carlton. And it's in the center of literally the main beach area, which is called like the Croisette, which is a huge promenade that everybody walks down, no matter where you're staying or whatever. And it's also where there's all the very high-end shopping is there. And it's just like the spot that you think of when you think of Cannes, like you think of the Carlton. It has a beautiful architecture, and it actually went through a huge renovation recently. They did like a gut renovation. It was closed for like 2 years, fully renovated, and they've all brand new restaurants and everything. And just the hotel, it's literally one of those palace hotels. Like, you walk in there and it's just like, it's so impressive. Even when I see it, like when I, if I'm not staying there, like the last time when I was in Cannes this winter, we stayed in an Airbnb for a few weeks. So, you know, we didn't stay at a hotel, obviously. So we're just like walking down the Croisette, and like, even every time you see it, it literally makes you smile because it's so beautiful.
One of those places, it's iconic. Mm-hmm. I feel like when you think of the French Riviera, you think of the Carlton, and it has such a fancy name.
I mean, it's like the perfect name. Like, you know, what else would it be called?
When you were staying there, can you tell us about like the hospitality and like the rooms or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, just to start with the hospitality, I mean, it's so French in the best way. Like, I think that's another great thing about just Cannes in general and the French Riviera in general too. Even though there might be international brands that own these hotels, like they're part of a bigger ownership group, the actual hotels are so like locally run, like the attitude and everything, like nothing is cookie cutter. You know, it's like a true 5-star hotel where as soon as you pull up, there's like five bellhops and valets like surrounding you. You know, when you pull up in a taxi from the airport, or if you pull up in, you know, there's people who pull up in like Bugattis there, and like, you know, from all over the world, like very wealthy people stay there, but they give everybody the same service. You know, you're really well taken care of. Just everything, especially after the renovation, they did such a nice job with, you know, restoring all the, like the marble and all the things like in the lobby. And, you know, they kind of kept the original character, but just made it fresh and light, like, you know, very nice color palette, like light and airy, because you're literally at the beach, but you're in a huge hotel. So it's very historic, but you don't want it to feel stuffy. Like that's why it needed a nice renovation. And yeah, I mean, just the magic of it is waking up to the view of the Mediterranean, where there's every room that faces the ocean. It has these huge windows and like kind of like, you know, like doors basically that open up, and you can have a view of the ocean. Even if you don't technically have a balcony, you can hear and see the ocean, which is my favorite thing. Like if you can hear the ocean and see it, like that's all I need and I'm happy.
Oh my God. It's a real life ambient noise. What's it called? White noise machine.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. And then every so often you hear a Euro siren drive by. Oh. And that's just part of the fun too.
Oh yeah. That makes it reminds you of where you are. Random question. When you walk into the hotel lobby, what does it smell like?
Honestly, I can't think of what the Carlton smells like. I can think of what the Martinez smells like because I've stayed there more recently.
Okay.
But I know they have a nice, definitely a nice signature scent, I'm sure. But
so I've come to really, I'm really into scent. One of the first things that I notice when I go, when a place is high-end versus not, even if they pretend to be high-end, is the smell. When you walk into a hotel, restaurant, wealthy person's home, it always smells like intoxicating. Like you want to bottle up that smell and take it home with you. And one of the most, like the memory I have of the Plaza Hotel, and they're still like this. You walk into that lobby and it smells like heaven. And me and Deanna have been to a lot of places, a lot of historical places that, you know, they're really cool in a lot of ways, but they smell historical and that's not a good thing.
Exactly. Well, and that's a big deal for me. So honestly, now that you bring it up, that is a big deal. I don't want it to smell musty and old. Like because you instantly notice it. Like
it ruins it.
It ruins it. And like, that's why I'm always like, whenever I'm like researching hotels for trips, I'm literally like figuring out, okay, when was it renovated? Like literally what, show me the date. Were all the rooms renovated? Was just the lobby renovated? Like, you know, because I can't deal with that.
Yeah, no, it's a mood killer. And especially, I can't speak for everyone, but I think for women, it's a mood killer because we are really sensitive.
The Carlton smelled great. I can't think of what their signature scent was off the top of my head.
I'm sure they did. Yeah.
It smelled very nice.
They have like a 3D tour on their virtual tour on their website that you can go through, and you can almost smell how good it is through that.
I mean, I love the trend of all these like hotel scents that you can buy too. Like, and all the collabs with like, you know, Acqua di Parma and stuff like that. I love these collabs.
Yeah. I want to buy the scent of the Plaza, and I think they might sell something. I don't think they have like a signature thing yet. And I don't know if it smells the same, but I would pay good money for that smell. I think it's just lilies, to be honest. They have big ass lilies everywhere and it's really airy and everything's really clean. But there's something else. It's like lilies and money. I don't know what this is.
That's the other thing for five-star hotels is how many fresh flowers they have. That's another thing that I always notice too. Like a true five-star hotel has tons of fresh flowers all over the place and inside the rooms. Not just inside suites, but like inside every room, at least a little arrangement, you know, on a table or on a whatever.
That's true. Yeah.
Because like, think about it. Any hotel, like any, you know, chain hotel or like four-star hotel has zero fresh flowers.
Yeah, they don't. And it smells like it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is all coming together. We can give a guide to how to pretend to be a five-star hotel.
Yeah, seriously. Like if any like, you know, mid-range hotel just like added a flower budget, they could probably jack their prices by like 20%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think cleanliness and scent is a big luxury giveaway, which is unfortunate because I think that should be standard. So the Carlton has this really interesting history.
It actually started from a love story, which is so nice. In 1909, Grand Duke Mikhail of Russia, who was the grandson of the Tsar, actually was basically banned from the Russian court and moved to Caen because he had fallen in love with the Countess Sophie de Marienburg, who was the granddaughter of the famous Russian writer Pushkin. But because she was only a countess, she was considered a commoner and too low of a level to be dallying with the future Tsar. So it was basically give her up and become the Tsar or get out of town. So he chose her and moved to Caen and abdicated the throne. So but when he got there, he was like, this will not do. There's no accommodations here for the people that I want to invite, for the parties I want to throw.
What's the saying? You can take the Tsar out of Russia, but you can't. Or whatever.
Yeah. So he basically financed almost all of the Carlton's construction. And they say
so he didn't lose his money. They just were like,
yeah, apparently he could take everything with him. He just couldn't come back to Russia.
He still had his bank account.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's cut off, but not off.
That reminds me of the last king of Italy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to pretend like we're punishing you, but we're not.
Yeah, you actually get to go somewhere better. So they say that he named it the Carlton because Carl means free person in Old English or Scandinavian. So Henri Rule was a famous hotelier, and he was it was sort of his idea, I think, to build the hotel, and he brought it to the Grand Duke and was like, hey, if you finance this project, it'll be what you're looking for. And then the architect was Charles Dalmas, and they built it in the neoclassical style, and the hotel finally opened on January 30th, 1911. And it was such an immediate huge success that they immediately bought the hotel next door, Hotel de la Plage, on its western side, tore it down and added more wings. And those opened in 1913. And so that's the hotel that we have today.
I find it fascinating. Like, this guy happened to just know a former royal burning some money in his pocket. And he's like, I got an idea. Like, don't you want to, how did that happen? How do I just become friends with these people? Like, where were they hanging out? He's like, I know what you need. Let me help you build this hotel. I just love those stories. It's a magical time back in the day.
You know, well, Caen started as a fishing village. Like, it was a tiny unknown place, but a lot of the wealthy aristocrats, especially from Britain, discovered it and started coming there to vacation in the winter. And so it slowly started to build up as this winter resort town. And so I think all of the hoteliers in the area probably started noticing where the money was going.
That's true. Yeah. And it always starts like that. This used to be I don't want to say the word shithole, but like this used to be where, you know, it's always a fishing village or like just like empty and boring. And someone comes and they're like,
yeah. And usually the British.
Yeah, it's the British. The British always do.
They're like, look, we love Britain. We don't want to be there all year long.
Yeah, that's true. They wanted to run away from the foggy days of London.
Yeah.
And Yeah, but then they have, oh my God, guys, I figured out the source of colonialism. it's bad weather. It reminds me of the guy who started the Savoy Hotel. He was one of those people, those British aristocrats that like went everywhere and purposely wanted to find, you know, the best of them. He would come later, probably, if he was still alive, actually. He died before Khan's existed, yeah, as it, yeah, is.
He did. So, but he definitely would have gone there to steal chefs for the Savoy. If,
yeah,
he'd still,
yeah,
been alive. That was his whole shtick.
Hoteliers have a lot of drama and scandal. The more we learn about it, it's really interesting.
Yeah, behind the scenes, there's a lot of drama. Yeah. So the architect that built the Carlton gave it these two very iconic towers on either of its seaward sides. And that's like always the part that you see on the postcards and stuff, is like those two majestic towers that make it look different, I think, than all of the other hotels in the area. But apparently he was obsessed with this courtesan named La Belle Otero, and he allegedly modeled those towers off of her breasts.
They're always doing things like that too, these, yeah, guys.
Yeah. You know, it's men. It's always.
Hey, that's sometimes that's just their love language, I think.
Facts. That is their love language. Can I get a man whose love language would just build me a hotel the shape of my boobs? That's all I'm asking.
That's all we need.
Yeah. Respect. You know what I love, though? It's that it's very much French, because she's a courtesan, and like I feel like in other cultures it would be looked down upon, and it's just like respectful to be that. They are very progressive.
Yes. She was the courtesan that of the time that ruled the French Riviera, had affairs with multiple heads of state, and she was basically, her whole point in life was to be beautiful and have men fall at her feet, basically, was what she said. She was like, this is the point of my life. And I've accepted that.
For her.
Yeah. So, and now she has this this landmark tribute to her beauty for decades and decades after she's passed on. So,
is it still the original? Mm-hmm. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, like during World War II, like south of France didn't get damaged or anything. So like, I think I didn't have a chance to double check this, but what I've heard is that like the Carlton Hotel is where like the British officers were staying when they were coming up from Africa. And then actually the other hotel, the Martinez, is where the American officers were. And that's why, like, historically, whenever Americans have gone to visit, like, the Martinez has more American visitors and the Carlton has more, like, European and British visitors.
Ooh.
The Carlton's basically was open for 1 year, and then World War I starts. So these poor hotels, I feel so bad for these hotels that during the early part of the 20th century, they could not catch a break. And it was it was immediately turned into a field hospital, which you can imagine, this beautiful luxury hotel, and then just boom, war and injured soldiers everywhere. And then, of course, the Russian Revolution starts in 1917, and a big part of the Carlton's clientele were Russian aristocrats, thanks to the Grand Duke. And so that also hit the hotel very hard whenever the aristocracy was no longer available to come, because they were
dead
through their own. Well,
you know, but the funny thing is how history repeats itself. So, you know, a few years ago when the war with Russia and Ukraine started, I remember I was in I was literally on a press trip in Dubai, like the day Russia like attacked Ukraine. And then there were a bunch of Russians there who were literally saying like, oh, we have a trip planned to France like this summer. Like, I think we're not going to be able to go. They'll probably, you know, shut off our visas and all that. And then literally that summer, you know, they had the sanctions and like Russians weren't allowed, you know, bunch of stuff. And when I was there in the summer, they were telling us how quiet it was because they have so many Russians usually in the summer for vacation and they weren't allowed to go anymore.
Wow.
Oh my God. That sucks. That's
crazy. History repeats itself all the
time.
That
is crazy. Yeah. It sucks that like regular citizens have to deal with the consequences of these leaders. And yeah. It's like, you. I just wanted to go to France. You know?
Yeah. Like, you know, they were just regular people, like, yeah. You know, like they were at the same hotel as me. Like, you know, I was like, oh, that's crazy. Like, you know, and what can you even say to these people? Because it's like, you know, it's not their fault. It's not my fault. It's like,
you know.
The government's going to do whatever it wants to do.
It only took how long for the USSR to fall?
Long enough.
Like, imagine you wanted to go to the south of France. It's 1917. And you're like, I'll just go when things... when things ease up. 1990.
Yeah. Well, in pursuit of world peace, the League of Nations held an unofficial summit in Caen in 1922. And so this was not like an official conference, but they were there to prepare for the Genoa conference. And actually, the U.S. was not part of the League of Nations, because even though it was Woodrow Wilson's idea, the U.S. did not join. And so we weren't there in an official capacity, but our ambassador to Great Britain was there. And he's actually in the photos. If you can see the photos of all of the diplomats lined up. His name was George Harvey, and he was there and stayed at the Carlton in the fifth floor.
Why weren't we there?
Because we weren't members of the League of Nations.
Why?
Isolationism.
Oh, God.
I know. It's so it was our president's whole idea. And then we were like, oh, we'll let you guys see if that works.
So American.
We're like, never mind. We'll stay over here.
And actually, we're good with this ocean between us. It's fine.
Yeah. But here again, another example of a hotel being the grounds for change in the world, good or bad. It's fascinating that this was where I didn't know that about the League of Nations at all, that they even like met up in a hotel.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. You've got to have all these people coming in from internationally, and they have to stay somewhere. So hotels are just like this natural place for all of these big societal changes to start happening.
You know, I think that happens also because monarchies are no longer. And so you can't have everyone come to your palace, because that's what like existed before.
Yeah.
So this is like the equalizer palace.
Yeah.
It's kind of like everyone, it's just no one really owns it. So in a way, it's like the safe, neutral place.
So I want to jump ahead to the Cannes Film Festival opening up in 1946. And so back then, of course, not as big a deal as it is now. There were only 8 journalists present for the very first one, but they all stayed at the Carlton. And so even now, like, the Carlton is sort of the go-to for a lot of journalists, because now like over 5,000, I think, journalists will come just for the film festival. I think it outdoes the Olympic Games in how much coverage it has.
Are you serious?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. And especially now, because of all the influencers too that go, like, literally, I feel like they get, it's so much press. And honestly, you hear the least about the films. It's literally about all the people who are there and all the red carpets. But it's like, honestly, you don't really hear anything about the actual films unless you read like film news magazines. Like,
yeah. Well, I didn't know it was more than the Olympics. That's crazy.
But yeah, just to put some scope on it, like, the Carlton says that they serve 10,000 breakfasts during the week of Cannes.
Whoa. Like
1,500 bouquets of flowers, 5,000 bottles of champagne.
And this is just the Carlton.
Yeah, this is just
the Carlton. That's crazy.
So that's the one time I've never been in Cannes. I've never been to the film festival, and I've never stayed there during the film festival, because everybody's told me, unless you're going there for, you know, for all the events and everything, like, you don't want to be there because the city is packed.
I mean, that's a lot of people for what it sounds like such a small area.
I mean, like, so the area where the actual festival is, it's literally in this place called like Palais des Festivals. It's just like their big conference center, basically. And they do conferences all year round, too. Like, honestly, Cannes is set up for these types of festivals, like, in, like, the spring and the fall. And, like, honestly, I think all year round, like, they're booked with, like, these huge conferences for everything. Like, if you ever go there, like, just for a vacation, there'll be something going on in the Palais des Festivals. Like, there'll be something. And, like, honestly, it's just as exciting looking as, you know, the film festival. Like, they have all these huge posters and like all this stuff going on. And then there's actually a whole area in front of the old port where they have like carnivals all the time too. Like literally like rides. And it's like something different all the time. It's not like a permanent thing. It's just literally like, if there's a yachting festival, they'll have a whole like, you know, like Olympic Village type thing, like set up like out there. And a lot of that's open to the public, and it can be really fun because you can go in there, walk around, and, you know, get the swag from all the places and everything. So there's always something going on.
Wow, man. I think maybe Cannes needs like a better marketing team. They should be talking about all the other stuff. People should be talking about that and going.
Like, for the US, people don't realize like it's all Europeans there usually, which, you know, makes it fun for us too. It's not just like filled with Americans, but yeah, every time I've been there, there's always something going on. And honestly, it has the infrastructure, which is the good thing, because some of these places, you know, it can get crowded or whatever, but like they have it set up like the right way.
Well, one of the, I think, best known movies that features the Carlton is, have you guys ever seen To Catch a Thief?
Yes.
Okay.
I love that movie.
This is an Alfred Hitchcock movie, of course, with Grace Kelly and Cary Grant starring. It was filmed there in 1954, I think. I think it was released in 55, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's a romantic thriller, and it takes place completely on the French Riviera. So lots of beautiful landscape and scenery throughout the movie. And then it was filmed in and around the Carlton. So, of course, Grace Kelly and Cary Grant stayed there.
They filmed in the suites. They had like suites dedicated to the Grace Kelly suite, I think.
Yeah, I think they filmed a scene in the Grand Salon as well. There's like a big,
yeah,
because I remember Grace Kelly's wearing like this really beautiful blue dress or something.
Grace Kelly really, like, this movie specifically probably is one of the most, in my opinion, I went to school for fashion, so maybe I'm being a little annoying, but is like the perfect costume dressed film on an actress I've ever seen. Every single outfit she wears is amazing. She's gorgeous, but like, wow. I don't know if any of you guys noticed.
Well, like, I think this movie is the most like movie star movie. Like, I feel like the look, it's like, whoa, they're movie stars.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they are. They're both beautiful people, but I remember watching the scene where she's in that white dress with that huge ass diamond necklace for the first time, and I'm like, straight up, if she time traveled 1,000 years ago, 1,000 years ahead, she will still be the most beautiful person. That outfit will still be in style. And I was just so like, oh my god, I wish I could dress and look like Grace Kelly in the way she presents herself. Not like, oh, be blonde and blue eyed, but like really.
No, she's.
I was stunning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a reason she became a princess. I mean.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But her husband was ugly.
Well, he needed the money. He literally needed her money. Isn't that really crazy?
Yeah. I thought it was the other way around.
No, he needed her money because Monaco was going bankrupt. Like, they literally were broke.
Oh, wow.
Which is insane.
Honestly, you guys should do an episode on that. On Monaco.
We should.
Because she, like, literally, Nobody knew about Monaco. He was going bankrupt. He needed some hype. So he needed like publicity and money. And he, I just read something about this the other day. He made her family, because I think her family was wealthy too. And then she's obviously had all her movie star money. He made them like pay a huge dowry, like to like the principality of Monaco. So for her to get married.
He made pay a dowry?
What? Don't understand like, this. Like, what
they
was,
were broke.
They sure, but what was the appeal for her to marry him?
To just be a princess. Literally, like they tricked her. Like they kind of hustled Grace Kelly.
Oh my God.
That's horrible.
Because he had a palace, like he had, you know, it looked very nice, but it was kind of like those British aristocrats that needed the American heiresses to pay for them because they were like house poor.
Yeah, the poor nobility.
Yeah, and they had like their fake, you know, like not fake, but like they had status, but they had nothing to back it up.
Wow, Grace Kelly got hustled, you're right. You know, it's crazy though. I mean, it explains a lot of her later years, but you know, she was, I don't want to call her names because I have a lot of respect for her, but she was a player, okay, to put it, you know about this, does anyone?
Yeah.
She had like multiple affairs with a lot, basically, I don't know what was happening with her, but there's a story where she was, I think, staying at the Chateau Marmont and she was in the lobby, like picking up men.
Yeah.
And she'd just be, or like, she'd be like, you know, let that man know to come to my room. And the guy's like, I don't know you. It's just like, just meet me in my room. So respect
to her. She was just a character. She was a character.
Like, yeah, but what's so confusing to me is this woman who obviously had a lot of affairs, like the fellas, but then ends up with a prince who, I mean, not to be rude, but I'm going to be rude because it sounds like he's an asshole, was ugly. He was not an attractive man.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. He was not good looking. Like, honestly, I think it was just like the only option. Like if it was her today, like she would be marrying somebody from like Dubai or like somewhere like that. You know what I mean? But honestly, that was probably the only prince that she ever met. Like if she met another prince, she would have just married a different one, I think.
So bizarre. I think she also wanted to quit acting. Right. And so maybe she saw it as an escape. Because she saw it as an escape where if she leaves the U.S. and she just becomes like, yeah, princess, then she'll retire. And, you know, I think there's a lot more to it. But that's really sad. Grace Kelly deserved a better ending than that. And then she died in a car accident or something, right?
I don't know. I heard she died in a car accident off one of those cliffs.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Because I think do you like old Hollywood stuff? Are you a...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever heard of this podcast called You Must Remember This?
Mm-mm.
Oh my God. Best.
All right.
All-time favorite podcast other than this one. It's an amazing podcast. She goes into depth of every single like old Hollywood, basically all of Hollywood. It's really fascinating. I listened to the episode about Grace Kelly. And I believe what happened was she had a stroke or a heart attack. Something happened while she was driving. She didn't just drive off the cliff or like,
oh, it was something. I didn't even know she was driving. I thought somebody else was driving.
I think she was driving and she had a stroke. And it's just really unfortunate.
Unfortunately, JQ has to go, but we are going to continue more about the Carlton's history next. Thank you, JQ, so much for joining us. And of course, we're going to share more of our interview with her in part two about the Martinez. So also come back for that.
Before you go, first of all, thank you so much for joining us and reaching out to us. Where can people follow you on Instagram, on TikTok, do you have a newsletter?
Yeah. I mean, everybody can just follow me on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, like all the platforms, just at JQ Louise. And you can check out my website, jqlouise.com, for travel tips and itineraries. And you can sign up for my newsletter on my website.
I'm very excited about this because I want to know where you're going next. What's up next on your agenda?
Next week, I'm going to Rome. And I'm going for a cool event, actually, too. So I'm very... They're having a, like, the first ever Roma Concorso. So it's like a concours d'elegance, like a classic car, like a classic car show, basically.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's the Annantara of Rome is hosting it, and it's the first one ever. So there should be some, like, very cool cars and, like, just, like, some fun events to go to. So... I can't wait.
What a perfect retro feeling event in Rome. Like, that's
exactly. So I know. Super retro.
Gotta watch Roman Holiday.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm literally like, I literally downloaded it so I can like watch it on the plane.
Yes.
They sent me the list of the cars and they're all from like, you know, the 50s and 60s and 70s, like all these like super rare Ferraris and like cool stuff. So I can't wait.
Are you staying at a hotel or are you Airbnb?
We're staying at the Annantara Rome, who's hosting the event. So we'll be right there. And I've never stayed there before, so I can't wait to check it out.
I've been to Rome once. It was really great. But I stayed at a hotel called Hotel Number One. So there's like Hotel Number One, Two, and Three, and there's 100 of them. And I went into the wrong Hotel Number One.
Oh, so it wasn't like, we're the best hotel.
No. They were like, Hotel One. Hotel two is over there, hotel three. And then I went in and they were like, this is not the hotel. I'm like, it's the same name. They're like, your hotel one is over there. And they took my luggage and they laughed and yelled at me. I still had a great time though. I do like Rome. I don't think you'll have that problem.
Amazing.
Oh, awesome. Well, this was so much fun. Thanks for having me. This was great.
So the Carlton has been the target of several high profile jewelry robberies. And I think the heists have to be my favorite part of the histories.
Yeah, but do you think, obviously I'm not going to say that To Catch a Thief has to do with these heists because these are much later on in history, but like it must have a reputation.
Right. Like, yeah, is life inspiring art or is art inspiring life?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the biggest one, I think, was in 1994 when three men brandishing automatic weapons entered the jewelry store in the hotel and just opened fire, apparently. The thieves made off with over $60 million in jewelry and precious stones. After the investigation, it was determined that the thieves were firing blanks because there were no bullet holes anywhere and they were never caught. So they literally went in there, fired blanks and made off with millions of dollars of jewelry. Oh, I'm sorry. This was not the biggest one. The next one was the biggest one.
Wow. That's actually okay. I respect these thieves because they're like, listen, we don't want to hurt anyone. Mm-hmm. We just want your jewelry. It's all wrong. They should go to prison. I'm not. Whatever.
Not excusing but like, it, but also
not excusing it. But no, but I'm just like, can more people do that? Like not kill people for this shit? Mm-hmm. Like I kind of
apparently it's pretty easy to do it the trickster way and not have to hurt anybody.
How would you know? Yeah, how because you're not taking the risk.
Yeah, no one is. You're not gonna fire a gun in the air and everyone around you be like, let me see if there's a bullet hole first.
Yeah. That's so true.
So another one in 2013, a thief stole $136 million in jewels from the hotel in a daylight robbery. The audacity. I love it. The thief, carrying a handgun, entered the salon through a French door, which they don't know if it was forced open or if someone had just left it unlocked. He picked up a sack containing 72 jewels, 34 of which have been described as exceptional, stashed them in a suitcase and walked out again.
So he didn't even like threaten anyone. He just literally
He just literally was like, oh, look, here's some jewels left unattended.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's the fault of the crowd.
The heist has been called the biggest ever in France and possibly the biggest of all time. The jewelry was part of a temporary exhibition by Leviev Diamond House and no suspects have been charged.
Second time, no suspects have been charged.
Yeah, they couldn't find anybody. Milan Paparic, a known member of the Pink Panthers, an organized crime gang, has been suggested as a potential suspect, having escaped prison days before the heist. This is a movie. This has movie written all over.
Yeah. Wow.
The Pink Panthers are an international jewel thief network responsible for a number of robberies and thefts, described as some of the most audacious in the history of organized crime. It has roughly 800 core members, many of whom are ex-soldiers with extensive military backgrounds, consisting mostly of Serbian and Montenegrin citizens who are believed to be Bosnian war veterans, making use of their military experience for criminal activity. The organization was named by Interpol after the Pink Panther series of crime comedy films.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, just you know there's 800 members of these people and no one's doing anything. What?
I really love that they're like, I mean, when I think of Serbians with military backgrounds, I think of like big beefy men, like, you know, very serious. And I love that Interpol was like, and we're going to name you Pink Panthers. I feel like that takes them down a little notch.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. But they have been, they're responsible for some of the most glamorous heists in history, with one criminologist describing their crimes as artistry. They have operated in numerous countries and include Japan's most successful robbery among their thefts. So apparently they're pretty good at it.
But how are they not caught? I just don't understand.
I don't know. Well, and this is in the night. I wonder how many they've done since everybody and their mother has a phone camera and Ring cameras everywhere, because.
Yeah. That's true.
Seems like maybe the amount of heists have definitely gone down.
So to continue on with the history, on November 3rd and 4th, 2011, the Quasette hosted the 25 heads of state and government of the main countries of the world. What are the main countries of the world? This is interesting.
20 of them, apparently.
Who came to attend the G20 summit. Then President Barack Obama stayed at the Carlton on the fifth floor in the same suite as George Harvey, the American representative who came in 1922 for the League of Nations summit.
Full circle.
The hotel celebrated its centennial in 2013. Lady Butter, the 88-year-old granddaughter of Grand Duke Michael, was in attendance. First of all, respect. I want to change my name to Lady Butter. Like, what the hell? And so she was 88 years old. She was 18 months old when she first stayed at the Carlton. She also never left.
Yeah.
Between her and George Harvey, when you go to the crowd, you never leave. You're just there for 100 years. So she's the granddaughter of Grand Duke Michael, the guy who started the hotel.
The guy who built it, yeah.
That's crazy. This was in 2013. Mm-hmm. She's still alive?
Probably not.
Maybe.
It's possible. She could be. She'd be over 100.
She's living a long ass time because life is good.
Right? If you're the granddaughter of a grand duke and spent most of your life in the French Riviera, I imagine your life expectancy is pretty good.
Yeah. It's a retirement place, apparently. After closing due to the COVID-19 pandemic in March 2020, the hotel reopened briefly in August, only to close again on September 10th, 2020, because it was a joke.
They were like, just kidding.
They were like, you know what, this isn't working out, people are still not leaving their homes, so you know what this means, it's time for an extensive renovation, including the addition of two new wings and the restoration of its Carlton Hotel inscription on the facade to show exactly how it looked when the hotel opened in 1913. It reopened on March 13th, 2023 as Carlton Cannes, a Regent Hotel. The hotel celebrated its grand reopening on May 17, 2023. The multi-day reopening celebration took place during the 2023 Cannes Film Festival. Appropriate time for its celebration, for its reopening. They're like, oh my God, this just happened to be, you know, they planned it. But they're smart. You know what? Something's there. They're like, no one's traveling. Let's redo this shit. And then when we're back, we're going to be better than ever. We're going to start with a bang.
And they did it right. They took 3 years to renovate it. So you know it's better than ever. You know that hotel smells good.
Thanks for listening to Hotel History. You can follow us on most social media platforms, Patreon, and Substack by searching for Hotel History or Hotel History Podcast. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so we can reach more listeners.